It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas at Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Friday. We finally made it. And it was a short week, too, but it feels like when you had to spend Tuesday night in urgent care and staples in your head, it feels like the week has dragged on a bit, but we've made it to Friday. Hope everyone enjoys their weekend. 25 more minutes left in your sports radio week, and then Red Sox baseball, Sox and Rays. We will have the lineups for you in just a couple of minutes. Jason, I'm going to need some music here. So you know what I like. Cue up the NFL primetime music. We're going to get through this together, people. If you are a Patriot hater and you're ready to sing, no, Jason, I want all of the primetime music. Go to YouTube and we get all the primetime beds. I love my NFL primetime music. It's like the one thing I'm like OCD about, that when we have NFL music, I want to play the NFL primetime stuff. And I don't want just one. I want like 15 of them. Those of you who are in the 25 to 40 range, you know how good NFL primetime was. We will get through this together, people. We will get through this. If you are a Patriot hater, you need to understand that the Patriots they're not dead now. They are not a threat anymore just because they lost yesterday. If you are a Patriot supporter, you don't need to wonder if this is the end. You also don't need to get defensive and say, oh, we'll see you when you kiss the rings. We'll see you in February. Understand the Patriots are very, very good. The Chiefs are very, very good. There was a football game early in the season between two teams, and the Patriots got exploited in some areas, and there's 16 other weeks for them to work on correcting those holes. Jason, give me the music. All right, let's talk about what we really learned from the game. Six things to me. Six possible takeaways, things that we really, really identified. The Julian Edelman effect on Gronk is absolutely real. That's not a hot take. It's absolutely real. Gronk had two catches for 33 yards, and the reason why Gronk was rendered relatively ineffective, well, number one, he did drop a touchdown. He had a touchdown taken off the board, and how are we feeling differently? How are we feeling today that's different if we say Gronk had three catches for 57 yards and a score versus just two for 33? But what Julian Edelman does, what that slot receiver does for the Patriots, that opens up the seam for Gronk, because the defenses, the linebackers, the safeties, they have to be paying special attention to what's going on underneath 10 yards. Edelman, Amendola, crossing routes, all of that is in play when Edelman is playing or when that slot receiver is someone you really have to fear. You didn't have Edelman, and Amendola got hurt yesterday in the third quarter, and that's when the offense started to sputter. Because the offense did not have an elite slot level receiver that Tom Brady's comfortable and familiar with, it impacted Gronk. It impacted the downfield product. The safeties were able to stay back. The linebackers were able to play a little bit deeper. So understand this. If you're worried about Julian Edelman's targets being gone, that's one thing. But you also need to worry about what are the effect on other people's targets. Can Gronk get open easier with teams able to focus on him? The Pats are going to need a slot receiver to step right up, and that takes me to point number two. I said it 2 weeks ago when Edelman got hurt, and I'm saying it now. It was proven last night. Danny Amendola is the most critical player on this offense now moving forward, not named Tom Brady. Because that slot receiver is so viable in this offense, because that slot receiver is so important, because that slot receiver opens up the door for Gronk, for Brandon Cooks vertically, Danny Amendola is the most important piece of this offense because he is the guy who can open up all those doors. He's the guy that Tom Brady has a rapport with. He's the guy that Brady has a comfort with, a familiarity with, now 5 years in the making of that relationship. Amendola was back returning punts yesterday, and I said it earlier this week, I would not put Danny Amendola back in that position. He got a concussion yesterday. He's been injured 3 years in a row in punt return situations. I understand that to Bill Belichick, the punt returner is not just a throwaway position. It's not just somebody you throw out there. He wants somebody with experience, and somebody that really brings a credible value and threat to that position that other teams have to think about. I do not agree with the position to put Amendola back there, because now your once great depth at receiver is already massively thinning. Edelman, Malcolm Mitchell, already gone. Amendola, he's so vital, I can't risk him getting hurt in those situations. I know our friend Ken Kreitz, the K-Train, he's a Northwestern graduate. He said Austin Carr is someone, also a Northwestern graduate, he would not have gotten rid of. Maybe Austin Carr could have been a guy who could have returned punts. Well, we'll see Austin Carr in 10 days when the Pats go to New Orleans and take on the Saints. And Ken Kreitz texts me in now. He goes, no way Amendola stays healthy. Well, he may not stay healthy just playing receiver. I don't need to expedite the process by putting him back to return punts. Champlain Valley game night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. What else did we learn? We learned that Brandon Cooks needs to be more involved in this offense. 3 catches yesterday. He had 80-plus yards. One of them was a 50-yard reception. So in terms of yardage, I mean, he didn't massively struggle. 88 yards or whatever it was, it's a good number, especially on the opener where football isn't necessarily as crisp as it will be in a month from now. But he needs to be more involved in this offense in a way that Edelman was. I can see Cooks. Yes, he's the home run hitter because of that track level speed. But why did I not see any bubble screens? Why did I not see any... they ran the reverse with Chris Hogan twice. Why did I not see that with Brandon Cooks? I need to get Brandon Cooks more touches and get some guys who are elusive in space. You know Josh McDaniels is thinking up ways to get guys the ball. I'm surprised that Cooks was not given more opportunities with the ball in his hands yesterday. He can't only be a deep threat. I know we're all enamored with the deep ball, but Cooks can't only be a deep threat. Takeaway number 4, what did we learn from this game? Mike Gillisley is going to be what we thought he was. They're going to lean on him in short yardage. He had 3 touchdowns. 3 touchdowns inside 5 yards. He also got stopped twice on 4th and inches at critical junctures of the game. One early, one late. But that's what his role is. He's going to be a short yardage machine, but he also carried the ball a little more than we thought. He led the team in rushing yards and rushing attempts with 15. Surprised that he got that many carries, but I think the Patriots need to do more of that. I think Gillisley needs 12 carries. I think Burkhead needs 8. I think White needs 6. I think Lewis needs 4. I think this team needs to run the ball 30 times a game collectively, and I think they need to split it up amongst the 4 of them. And last night, the Pats didn't really do that. It was dominated in terms of carrying the football by Gillisley and by White. So Gillisley is, though, what we thought he was. Takeaway number 5. Something I heard after the game, and I'll play it for a minute. I'll have Jason cut the music in a little while and play this. Ian Rappaport was talking about Malcolm Butler, and he was saying that he thinks that Malcolm Butler's entered his last season in New England officially. Jason, pause the music for a second. Let's play the Ian Rappaport last night on the NFL Network.
My understanding is this is expected to be his final season in New England. The reason is they invested a lot in Stephon Gilmore. They are not going to franchise tag Butler if he goes out and has another Pro Bowl season. They made a slew of offers for him over the last couple of years. None recently. They really are done negotiating. So the hope is he plays this year, kills it, and goes out and makes a lot of money for another team next year, and they get a compensatory.
So, Jason, give me the music again. As far as Butler, you've seen now for the Patriots, you have seen Jamie Collins, Chandler Jones, you've seen him traded. You now could see Butler let go. And after the defense you saw yesterday, do you want to see Malcolm Butler let go? Do you want to see another big name in his prime let go over dollars and cents, especially for a team that's had so much cap room in the last, you know, in this offseason? We know they've had money to play with because they haven't overspent on guys. I understand not wanting to give a 27, 28-year-old corner a 4 or 5-year deal, but you just did that by giving Stephon Gilmore a big deal hovering around that age that will take him into, you know, take him into age 30. You've already done that. If you're the Patriots, what you need is you need pass rushers. If you're going to let Butler go, you better spend that money elsewhere, and you better get some pass rushers in here, and you better hold on to some draft picks and develop some pass rushers. The last thing we learned in this game is really my biggest takeaway. The Chiefs are good. I thought all along that Kansas City and Pittsburgh are the only teams that can beat the Patriots. Make no mistake, the Patriots are winning the AFC East. Despite what Arnie says, the Dolphins are not as good as the Patriots. The Jets and Bills, they're not even in the conversation. The Patriots are going to the playoffs. And when it gets to the playoffs, I'm going to trust Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. I think the only team that can dethrone them in the AFC, Pittsburgh, Kansas City. Kansas City ran the ball well, strong offensive line. Alex Smith, not only did he not lose you the game as a game manager, he won you the game as a game winner. Four touchdowns, over 300 yards. Tyreek Hill, a game breaker on special teams, a game breaker in the wide receiver room. Travis Kelce, you didn't even see his best yesterday. He only had five catches for 40 yards, and Travis Kelce is a guy who can lead this offense. The Chiefs are for real. The Eric Berry loss really does hurt, but the Chiefs are a very good team.
The reason why Patriots fans are so upset and I think so ready to hit the panic button, and I speak as a biased Giants fan, unfortunately, if you're a Patriots fan, but the reason that they're so upset is because they don't think any team holds a candle to them. The Kansas City Chiefs very well could be a playoff team. You shouldn't take anything away from Alex Smith or how the rest of Kansas City played yesterday. Sometimes you just get beat by a better team, and most importantly, it's only week one of the season.
The Patriots were not the better team yesterday, but the Patriots are still the better team on paper, and I know championships aren't won on paper. But yes, you can't look at it and say, I mean, the reason why I think Arnie was so shocked and so giddy about this is because he had the Chiefs missing the playoffs. I had the Chiefs being a team that can get to a Super Bowl potentially. I value what the Chiefs are, and I think that is why this loss doesn't bother me, it doesn't concern me, because it is a good team. Let's go to New Orleans next week and see if New Orleans can score or can stop New England on offense, because I don't know that will happen. All right, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Jason, you are a Giants fan, Giants, Cowboys. Today was so Patriots heavy that we really didn't get into the Giants on the level that I would have wanted to. What am I looking for out of the Giants? Pretty simple. I'm looking at a lot of individuals here for the G-Men here in week number one. Evan Engram is the guy I've wanted to see all along. Highest tight end they've drafted since Jeremy Shockey, and Eli Manning hasn't had a reliable tight end since Jeremy Shockey. Kevin Boss and Will Ty and Larry Donnell, none of them, I think, can be what this kid can be. Basically, Engram, he's tight end positionally, but he's built and runs like a wide receiver. I think he can be an absolute matchup nightmare in the middle of the field. I can't wait to see how the Giants use him, especially if Odell Beckham Jr. is compromised at all. Then Engram maybe can take an even bigger part in the offense. I think Engram can be a big part. Sterling Shepard, I want to see as well. If Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't play, what does Shepard look like? If Beckham does play and Shepard's in the slot, how good can he be there? He had the most touchdowns of any wide receiver in the slot a season ago. Defensively, can the team halt Ezekiel Elliott again? You know Elliott's going to be wound up for this game. It's likely the only one he'll play until week nine, which is going to get us until, man, it's going to get us into November. So if Elliott only has one game to play until November, how motivated is he going to be? I can imagine very. He struggled last year against the Giants in both meetings. A game in week one that the Giants won, maybe somewhat luckily. Terrence Williams, who stayed in bounds when he should have run out of bounds at one point. But what will Ezekiel Elliott do? What will that Dallas offensive line look like? And how will the Giants neutralize it? The Giants have a very, very good defensive front. They have a very, very good secondary, which could make it difficult to pass as well. Last thing I'm looking for in this game is, from the Cowboys' perspective, is Dak Prescott. Everyone says, oh, Dak Prescott last year, what did he do? He relied on Ezekiel Elliott. He relied on that offensive line. He didn't ask him to do a lot. Well, what are they going to ask him to do tomorrow? What are they going to ask him to do this season? Is he going to hand the ball off to Ezekiel Elliott 35 times and say, hey, you're not playing for the next 8 weeks, and we know, or for the next 7 weeks, and we know that. So we're just going to ride you, and Prescott's not going to ask to do anything? Are they going to come out and have him throw the ball 45 times? I know if I were the Cowboys, I would try to establish Elliott, ride him, and let him get healthy over the next 6 weeks. But how Dak Prescott is used this year, I think, is going to be telling what they think about him. Is he the guy who, early in his career, they wanted to say Russell Wilson was just a game manager, relied on Marshawn Lynch and a great defense? Is Dak Prescott ready to break out of that stereotype, or do they keep him in it?
And the thing about it is, considering Ezekiel Elliott, at least as it stands right now, is only going to play this one game and then be suspended for six, you could really not get a total picture of what Dallas is going to do. And obviously, game plans change week to week and schemes change week to week. But they could just run the ball heavy just because they're going to have Elliott this one time and get as much out of him as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, we weren't really able to do this earlier in the week because Tuesday was my one-year anniversary at the station, and I ended up hitting my head, having to go to urgent care, wasn't able to do the show. So I wanted to do this all week, and it's been so hectic. We weren't even on yesterday because of the Patriots. I haven't been able to just tell you all what I've thought here. A year into this job in Burlington, it's been absolutely gratifying. You listeners have been phenomenal. I know sometimes we disagree on Facebook, or we disagree on the text line or on Twitter, and I welcome that stuff. I think that debate is great, but you know, the station's in a place here when you look at the numbers and all that, and I'm not at liberty to divulge what numbers are, and it probably doesn't mean a whole lot to you, but the station's in a place where it's arguably the best that it's ever been. It's being the most listened to that it's ever been, and it's because of all of us working together, from Rich, Arnie, me, Jason, people who are here, you know, that are no longer here, that have done a good job with us in that last year. You guys, the listeners, the advent of the text line, the more phone calls we get, the more social media engagement, it has been great. I get a lot of emails every day, every week from people saying, hey, Brady, man, I love that interview, or that was a great guest, or hey, I love that you put that online, or oh, I can't believe Arnie said that, or really good take by Rich, can I hear it again? You guys are listening. You guys are out there. It took a lot for me to move up here from Albany, an area that I'd been for 17 years and a comfort zone for me. It took a lot even to move those 3 hours, and it's been absolutely awesome, and the station is moving a really positive direction, and really look forward to where it will go in year number two, because we're all in this together. You guys want to hear great sports talk, and we want to provide it for you. So we're going to keep coming up with great guests. We're going to keep coming up with great features, great segments, great contests, and we're announcing our next great contest on Monday at 5. And trust me, if you like local and national, it's going to be something that you love. So thank you for the last year. I appreciate it. I know you listeners do as well. We'll all keep moving forward. Red Sox lineups. Red Sox and Rays today from Fenway. 70-71 for Tampa. 79-61 for Boston. Chris Archer's on the mound, the ace of the Rays staff. 9-8 with a 3.76. The lineup for Tampa is Peter Borges, Kurt Casili, Corey Dickerson, Lucas Duda. That's not the lineup, actually, Jason. The Red Sox lineup here, not correct right now. The Rays listed like their entire roster. So
Arnie's probably playing.
Arnie might be playing. Let's hope not, though. See if we can grab the proper lineup here real quick. I mean, it's definitely out. The game starts in a little while, so it's odd to me that the lineup did that. But Pomeranz is pitching. Bottom line, he's been 11-2 since May. He's absolutely been just utterly dominant. See if I got the lineups here, Jason. See if they're correct. See if we can run through them real quick. They're not gonna have them in full right now. So Red Sox and Rays 6:25. Remember tomorrow, Sports Saturday. Jeff Paul, Bernie Sablicki, they're back in the saddles. Jason and I filled in last week. Jason's not gonna do the hot dog eating contest this week because he's already won them all. So Tim Kirchen on the show tomorrow. They're gonna have an absolutely great show. And then Jason's on the call of Rice and Burlington over on 960 The Zone. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff. So for Jason, for Arnie, I'm Brady. We'll see you tomorrow with Sports Saturday starting at 10 right here on 101.3 ESPN.